Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 7 of Season 4 of Move Your Own Minute, the daily podcast where we take a hilarious and poignant journey through the 1989 Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan rom-com, When Harry Met Sally, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me again today is Nick Rehack of French Toast Sunday. Welcome back to the show, Nick.
Thank you once again for having me, Rob.
Well, you know, it's just like a fleeting thought that jumps in and out of the transient of your mind.
I'll take it.
Why not? So yesterday we had a very animated conversation of Ferris Bueller's Day Off and of When Harry Met Sally and a whole bunch of other things. So anyone who missed that episode, go back and listen to that. Nick and I had a lot of fun talking yesterday. So hopefully today will be just as fun. Yesterday we decided to have a conversation yesterday based on the fact that Harry and Sally are just talking all throughout the minute also, and today we get some more talking between the two of them. This is a very dialogue heavy movie, no question about that, but it's great dialogue, and that's why it's so much fun to talk about it. So episode 7 begins with Harry finishing his thoughts and spitting another grape, and ends with Harry trying to defend his argument. So yesterday we ended things. We were cut off by Harry saying, "That, my friend," and we continue with him by saying, "is a dark side." So again, I'm going to do what I did yesterday. I'm just going to read through the dialogue, and then we'll go into it. Makes it easier than splitting it all up along the way.
For sure.
And then Sally responds to him and says, "That doesn't mean you're deep or anything. I mean, yes, basically, I'm a happy person." And Harry responds, "So am I. And I don't see that there's anything wrong with that." "Of course not. You're too busy being happy." "Do you ever think about death?" "Yes, sure you do. A fleeting thought that jumps in and out of the transient of your mind. I spend hours. I spend days. And you think this makes you a better person? Look, when the comes down, I'm going to be prepared, and you're not. That's all I'm saying. And in the meantime, you're going to ruin your whole life waiting for it." So, again, this is a great conversation that continues the conversation from yesterday. There's more dialogue, but that's like a whole different scene, so we'll get to that a little later. First, we'll talk about this one. So, as Harry is talking, he's, again, spitting. He's continuing to spit. You don't really see him put grapes in his mouth, but he keeps spitting pits.
That's true.
He must have, grapes with multiple pits in them.
Residuals.
Maybe. Anything's possible.
That's true. That is true.
And the conversation is quite fascinating to listen to, because we established yesterday that we're talking about a person who is very dark and obviously disturbed, and someone who has a very optimistic look on everything in life. And to see the contrast between the two of them as they're talking is just great. And this minute continues with that. She gives a great retort to the fact when he says that that's a dark side. And, then she says, "Well, that doesn't make you deep. Just because someone has a dark side doesn't necessarily mean that they're deep."
Yeah, and I agree with that. I mean, and part of me is like, why did she bring it up that way? They're just talking about being dark. I mean, I don't even think he broached the topic of saying that, he was deeper or had a wiser outlook on life or anything. So that line kind of threw me, and it kept me thinking, like, why would she bring that up? Because I don't think the two are mutually exclusive, I think you can still be deep and have a profound outlook on life, but still be not overwhelmingly, but like super positive and super happy. I mean, look at like the Dalai Lama, right? Happy, smiling, and he's always has something profound to say. Like, I feel like that, something like that.
Right. No, for sure. It's just, but they also, they try to make a connection between, happy or dark. I mean, but dark side doesn't mean that someone is sad.
Right.
So it's a very strange way to contrast those two things. Because he says, "Well, you're too busy being happy." So, I mean, if you're too busy being happy, then that means you're not going to have a dark side. That means you're not going to be looking at the dark side of things. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't really that don't really track that well. I mean, yeah, you can be happy and weirdly think about death, but
yeah,
it doesn't mean you're happy about the death. You could just be in a positive mindset while looking at or having a discussion about, you know?
Right, exactly. You know, and, you know, the conversation goes around the whole idea of whether someone's more or less an optimist or a pessimist.
Right, right.
You know, about the whole thing. Then he talks about the fact that, you know, that he's going to be more prepared for death. You know, is there a way to prepare for death?
Like, no, not at all. Well, I mean, you know, technically the only way you can be prepared for it is if you have a will. You know, I mean, if you have some things in your life that you want to make sure are taken care of, or family that you want to make sure is taken care of, but that's the only thing you can really do to prepare.
But it's not to prepare yourself. That's to prepare for what people need to do after you're not here.
Exactly.
You know, that type of thing. But you're not preparing yourself.
Yeah, no.
So I mean, I've never understood that line here, where he goes that he's gonna, you know, when he says when the comes down, I'm gonna be more prepared, and you're not. And you know what it comes down to is nobody's prepared.
No,
you know,
it could happen at any moment. That's right. Anything could happen. Just anything. I mean, I can understand if it's an illness and you're given a certain amount of time and you make peace with, you know, some regrets that you have and other relationships. Sure, that I can see in a way is a preparation of death, but it's still not at the same time. You know what I mean? It's more of like a conscious and you're just feeling better and you're not leaving anything left. I don't know what the phrase I'm looking for is, but you know what I'm getting at. Like, yeah.
Yeah, I know what you're getting at, but it comes down to the fact that he has no idea what he's saying.
Yeah, you know? No, pretty much.
But I think that's also part of his personality, that he's somewhat pompous in you know, trying to show everyone that he knows everything. You know, that he knows the best way to do things. And, you know, if you don't do them, that's your problem. But, you know, for me, this is the best way to do it, and I'm going to be prepared. You know, I don't know. Doesn't really make sense. But then she brings up a good point, because she basically says, well, in the meantime, you're going to ruin your whole life while you're waiting for death to come.
That hit really hard when she said that. That was the moment where I was like, oh, wow. Like, that's deep. That's deep and that's profound.
Correct.
So it's that perfect thing that this script does throughout the film, where they introduce this idea and then they look at it from both sides. And then they execute on that idea to kind of prove both points at the same time.
Yeah.
And then, like, then they go on to the next thing. And it's a really, really, really well done script. Really well done.
Yeah. There's no question about that. You know, this is Nora Ephron's best writing. No question about that.
For sure. For sure.
You know, she in her other scripts, she also has great dialogue, but I think this also has to do with the great chemistry between Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan. You know, I mean, even if we talk about Sleepless, okay, so Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks also have great chemistry, but it's not the same type of chemistry that Billy Crystal has with her.
I would agree. It is a different chemistry. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that people don't find, you know, them believable, not in, you know, in Sleepless and in You've Got Mail. Those are both believable, that Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan, you know, could be a couple together,
mm-hmm.
You know, so it's not one or the other, you know, but it, you know, if I were to have to choose between which of them has, I guess, better chemistry, it's still going to be the two of them here. You know, as much as I love those other two movies.
Well, I think, yeah, no, I would agree with you. Yeah.
And at this point, you know, the conversation is pretty much over, and then he spits out another grape. but what's really funny is you see him chewing that grape for a very long time.
Yeah. Yeah. And it doesn't, like, juice up or salivate, and you know what I mean? Like, wouldn't you expect to – but nope, not him.
And it makes me wonder, you know, if he's improvising here.
I don't see why it wouldn't, because he's definitely of that ilk. Like, he can improvise and make it look like it's a naturally occurring thing. Like, it's improvising without saying it's improvising.
Yeah. It's true. And then we get an external shot of the car driving. It's, I guess, dusk. So, again, we don't know what time they left Chicago. Mm-hmm. So you can't really tell where they are.
No.
But the one thing that you can tell is the fact that they've now switched drivers.
Mm-hmm.
So depending on whether they switch drivers, you know, every 3 hours or every 4 hours, or every 6 hours, you know, that's the only type of indication we can really get as to, you know, how much time has passed. You know, if they're 3 hour shifts, then this is probably 6 hours later, or it could be 12 hours later. You know, from that perspective, because in the universe of this movie, it takes 18 hours to get from Chicago to New York. In our universe, it takes about 12 and a half or 13 hours. Yeah. So, I don't know. And then the car drives past this like refinery or something like that, and you see a big sign that says Genstar. And it says Genstar Building Products Company. And I spent way too much time trying to find what this company was. Way too much time. And it was not easy. And I actually ended up finding the logo. And I was able to get minimal information about it, that it's a Canadian company that is from it's known as Flintcote, Kote. Don't know, but it's a company basically that sells a whole bunch of different it sells like cement and things like that, you know, the products to you know, for buildings,
Yeah,
for
paints,
building houses
primers,
and
and
stuff like
yeah.
that. Yeah, things like that. But I was like so stoked when I saw it. I was like, oh, something to look up here. And I literally spent probably about 45 minutes trying to find it. And I kept finding like little bits and pieces, but nothing. I wasn't able to put the puzzle really together on that one. So,
Flint coat, though.
yes.
The only thing I would think of is Flint, Michigan, but
That's what I would think too, but it was originally a Canadian company. So, you know, I don't know how that
which,
really
I mean,
fits
they're
in together.
kind of close. So they would have to be along one of the lakes then. So they must be in like a maybe a Toledo or like a Cleveland at this point in the day. Because I saw all the refinery stuff. I'm like, where are they? Like, because I assume they're going to stick close to the top, like along the lakes, and then you cut through, you know, Pennsylvania to get to New York. But
Right, well, that's the way you would drive. I mean, when we would drive from New York to Detroit, we would go New York, cut through the tip of New Jersey, and then straight down Pennsylvania through Ohio, you know, right up to Michigan. But if you were to continue, I think it's called I-80 or I-90. I don't even remember. It's
80,
been
you're
many
right. Or a
years
little
since
bit
I
of
drove.
both. There's 80 and there's 90.
All right, okay. So if you continue along that, so that takes you through Indiana and then into Illinois. But again, they're taking the scenic route because it takes them 18 hours. So,
That's true.
you know, I don't know. You know, maybe it's similar to what I did, you know, when I came to visit you. You know, I took the scenic route because I didn't want to have to pay tolls.
That's, I don't blame
You know,
them.
so Sally wanted to save money in 1977 on the non-toll roads. You know, who knows? Harry doesn't care. You know, he's getting a free ride where he's just to pay for gas. You know, he's chipping for gas. That's probably
If
all he
that.
needs to do.
If
If
that.
that, exactly. Because we never see him pay. So who knows?
That's true.
And then we get our first Casablanca conversation of the movie. And there will be numerous ones along the way. And I first of all, as a movie lover, I think it's great that, you know, the two of them are sitting and talking about Casablanca, even though it's only 35 years after Casablanca came out, you know, when this is supposedly taking place, you know, in 1977. But, you know, these are people who've seen the movie quite often. Okay, now what do you know about the movie Casablanca? I'm assuming you've seen it, or I can incorrectly assume that maybe you, I don't know, because you hadn't seen When Harry Met Sally yet, so.
That's true. I absolutely love Casablanca, and I think Casablanca is a perfect film. There is nothing wrong with any single second, any single anything. There is nothing wrong with Casablanca. It is truly a perfect film.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. So, Casablanca is a movie from 1942. It's a romantic drama, directed by Michael Curtiz, starring Humphrey Bogart, Ingrid Bergman, and Paul Hindweed. It's set during World War II, and it was actually filmed during World War II also, which I always find fascinating, the fact that, you know, as things are still going on in Europe, and things are getting worse and worse. That people don't realize that they're getting worse and worse, but they're getting worse and worse. And you know, they're making this movie about the war, so it was very timely for it, for the time. It went on to win Best Picture at the Oscars. Curtis won Best Director. It got Best Adapted Screenplay also. It was one of the things. It is ranked on many, many lists as one of the greatest films in history.
Yeah, I would agree.
It was in 1989 one of the first movies chosen by the Library of Congress to preserve in the National Film Registry.
Rightfully so.
Yes. So we'll go through their conversation here, that the or at least what we get in this particular minute. So then Harry goes, "You're wrong." Sally goes, "You're wrong." And Harry goes, "Yeah, I'm not wrong. You're wrong. He wants her to leave. That's why he puts her on the plane. I don't think she wants to stay. Of course she wants to stay. Wouldn't you rather be with Humphrey Bogart than the other guy? I don't want to spend the rest of my life in Casablanca married to a man who runs a bar. That probably sounds very snobbish to you, but I don't. You'd rather be in a passionless marriage and be the first lady of Czechoslovakia than live with the man you've had the greatest." And then things get cut off. So we don't know what the greatest is, but they've had the greatest something, you know, the greatest love of all. I don't know. You know, it's a great conversation. It's something that in order to fully appreciate it, you have had to have seen Casablanca.
Yes.
You know, I wonder what people who haven't seen Casablanca think when they hear this conversation between them. You know,
They pro
it's rare that in movies they do something like this, where they'll have characters having a conversation where you need to know what they're talking about to understand the conversation. You know, in general, you know, when you're writing a movie and you're writing a script or something like that, you want the audience to always understand what's going on without having done any previous research. You know, that type of thing. And
Typically, yeah.
in this case, it's not. But again, it goes with the whole conversation. And I like the way they did it.
Yeah, very much so. I like how they, and it just kind of gets introduced out of nowhere too. It's not like a, hey, it's no, here's a passage of time, and now let's bring you back in on this other conversation we're having, because like you said, it does kind of pop up every so often throughout the film, which I think is nice. It shows up again and again. It's not one of those like they talked about it and then it's over with, like a bit or a moment where people can point to it and go, oh yeah, like the Casablanca scene and that, and then you can cut to it or you can snip it right from out and then play it standalone. Like, no, it's kind of interweaved within the film whether we realize it or not.
Well, that's also because it's connected to the story of Harry and Sally. You know, about, you know, here you have this question, okay, you know, who should the woman be with? You know, is she looking for you know, for status, or is she looking for something more meaningful? You know, that type of thing. And that's sort of what the two of them are struggling through this whole movie. Are they looking for someone to be their best friend, or are they looking for someone to spend the rest of their life with?
Why not both?
Because most people think that that can't happen, you know, and you know, you don't want to ruin that. But we're getting ahead of ourselves, because
A little bit,
the rest of
yeah.
this week we'll get a little bit into that. We'll talk a little bit about how that works here. So they mentioned Humphrey Bogart. Do you know Humphrey Bogart's full name?
Oh, I used to.
I'll give you a hint, Star Trek. Does that help?
Oh, gosh. Are you gonna have to tell me? And I'm gonna have to pinch myself afterward.
Okay, his birth name is Humphrey DeForest Bogart,
Yep.
like DeForest Kelly, you know. He was born on December 25th, 1899,
Christmas
and
Day.
passed away on January 14th, 1957. He was nicknamed Bogey. And he is considered one of the greatest male movie stars of classic American cinema. He has been in many very popular films, including Casablanca, obviously. He was in The Maltese Falcon. He was in High Sierra. He played Philip Marlowe in The Big Sleep. He ended up winning an Oscar for his work in The African Queen, but he was also in The Treasure of the Sierra Madre, which is a personal favorite of mine, The Caine Mutiny, In a Lonely Place, Key Largo, Dark Passage. He's been in a lot of very interesting films. I didn't like him so much in Sabrina. I think he wasn't that good in it.
I didn't see Sabrina, so I'm going to take your word for it.
You can see it. You can go and watch it. It will not be Sabrina. Neither version of Sabrina is currently on my list to do minute by minute. So.
Oh, you sure?
Yeah, I'm more than sure. I don't hate them. I don't hate the movies, but they're just not up there. You know?
Yeah, it's not for you.
Yeah, it's not. That question is not for me. It's just not something that I want to break down minute by minute. You know. But that's okay.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, this is, again, the conversation between Harry and Sally just abruptly ends as they basically are parking in a, you know, outside of a diner. And we see that there's a sign at the diner that in the background that says they're near the Evergreen Motel. You know, we can't really see the name of the diner. It just says cafe. Mm. That's it. You know, you have the Evergreen Motel and a cafe. And, you know, first of all, we talked a little bit yesterday about the geography of the movie. Mm-hmm. And what's great is apparently this scene and the place of where this diner is located. If you look in the background, there's a bridge. Okay. Mm-hmm. As they're pulling into the parking lot, that is the Vincent Thomas Bridge, which is a suspension bridge in LA. So okay. maybe that's why it's taking them so long to get to New York, because they're in LA. I don't know. It is a bridge that links San Pedro and Terminal Island.
Hmm.
Okay, it is the only suspension bridge in the greater Los Angeles area. It opened in 1963, and it was named for there was a California assemblyman, Vincent Thomas, who championed its construction and got it named after him. It is the first welded suspension bridge in the U.S., and it is the fourth longest suspension bridge in California, and the 76th longest bridge in the world.
What?
Yes.
There's a lot of bridges out there.
Apparently. And it is the only suspension bridge in the world that is supported entirely on piles.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, unfortunately, we're going to go a little dark here like we did yesterday. I guess it's the Harry Burns in me. That keeps so apparently the LA police say that every few months there's at least one suicide attempt made from this bridge, and there are actually two well-known people who actually committed suicide from that bridge.
Ooh, is
one second. I'll say the first one because the first one for sure is not the one you were thinking of.
Okay.
On October 26, 1990, Olympic bronze medalist, a diving medalist named Larry Anderson. He was killed when he wasn't trying to commit suicide. He was trying to set a diving record and ended up killing himself by doing that. So the person who died, who do you think it is?
Tony Scott.
That is correct.
Unfortunately.
Very unfortunately, yeah. And also, I said we're getting a little darker here, but whatever.
Regretting going, ooh, I know, being overly excited to answer. I feel a little gross inside.
It's okay. But, so on August 19th, 2012, again, it's been over a decade. Wow.
What?
That's amazing. Seriously. Tony Scott committed suicide from jumping off that bridge, And that was after he found out that he had terminal cancer, if I remember correctly. Now, I'm not saying that that condones anything, but that's
No,
just
of course. Yeah.
the
It's just part of their story, unfortunately.
yeah. Now, there's a funny sign that you can see as they're pulling into it, which says "No unauthorized parking" sign.
Yeah.
No unauthorized parking. So now you're coming to a cafe. Why would you
Yeah,
have a
who's
sign that says,
unauthorized? Like,
"I'm sorry, you're unauthorized to come and eat in this cafe"?
yeah, you
I
can't come
don't
here.
know.
What? Why not?
Exactly. But we can see as the car pulls in that Harry is the one driving. So as I said, we now know that either 6 or 12 hours have passed since things, since they left Chicago going in the wrong direction, because now they're in LA. So Nick, you have anything else you want to say about this minute before we get into the script?
The only thing that kind of throws me off a little bit is as they're pulling in the passenger seat, her body is shifted to where she's just facing that window. But I guess, well, I mean, I guess we'll find out why in the next minute. So we'll cover it then. I'll
Yeah.
table this.
Yeah, we'll talk about that tomorrow. No, she's like leaning forward. And it looks like she's leaning forward.
It's weird. The placement
Yeah,
of her
it's
whole
very
body
weird.
is weird.
That's correct. But we'll get there. We'll get there. So again, the scripture says a few minor changes here. First of all, when Harry says the idea of a fleeting thought that jumps in and out of your transient of the transient of your mind. So in the script, he says in and out of the transom of your mind. I don't even know what either of those words mean. It sounds like he's just making up words. That's what I would think. And then when they have their conversation about death, and then Sally goes, "In the meantime, you're going to ruin your whole life waiting for it." And that's, how things end in the movie, but in the script it continues. And then she says, "What are you going to do in New York?" And then Harry responds, "I don't know. I just graduated from law school, but I never really thought I was going to be a lawyer. I see it as a jumping off point." And Sally goes, "You should be a lawyer. The kind that does wills. I think you'd be really good at explaining to people they're going to die." And then it says the camera focuses on Harry's reaction to that. It's a great line. I don't know if I'm happy or sad that it's not in the movie in the end, but it's a great zinger from Sally. If they're talking about death, and then she says to him, that you should be a lawyer who deals with probate. And so yeah. Then it continues with them driving, and it says the car pulls off the road onto the shoulder. Sally and Harry get out and switch seats. Harry drives now, and the car pulls away, leaving rubber and dust. So that just shows that they don't stop at a particular place to do it. It's like, okay, time. It's been, it's it we've hit the 3 hour point, let's stop. And then they do a what's called a Chinese fire drill, right?
Yeah,
You've
yep.
So whatever, I mean, it's not necessary, and it's fine that they cut it out, but it's funny to see that they put that in there. And then the conversation between the two of them about Casablanca starts with Harry saying he doesn't want her to stay, that's why he puts her on the plane. As opposed to it doesn't have the whole argument of you're wrong, I'm not wrong. So again, they're minor differences. And then he says you'd rather have a passionless marriage as opposed to you'd rather be in a passionless marriage. So, just a little few little minor discrepancies here. Nothing
Yeah.
nothing major.
Right on.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so every Tuesday we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track, Dating and Courting Edition, where my guests will give some sort of story, adventure, misadventure of something that has happened to them over the course of their life that is related to dating or courting. So, Nick, you have a story for us?
I do, yeah, and it's like weirdly kind of dark as well, which is just fitting for today and yesterday.
I hope there are no cadavers in the story.
No, 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 no.
Okay. So
Just
it's not
subject
that
matter
dark. We're
wise.
good. We're good.
Yeah, I was dating this girl, and we decided to go and see a movie together. And the movie that I really, really wanted to see, and she had known that I was like a big into film and everything, was
but at you,
the
time, you like movies?
Just a little bit.
Oh, okay.
Just a little bit. I'm getting there. I'm getting to be a fan. She knew how big she knew how big into David Fincher I am. And at the time, David Fincher had just released The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. And I'm like, oh my gosh, we should go see this. So we go and we're watching it. And she does that thing where she's sitting to my right. So she puts her arm around my arm and just kind of slowly lays her head so it's on my shoulder while we're watching the movie. I'm like, okay, kind of a weird movie to do that with, but sure. So as she does that, a minute or two later, it comes to this very intense and aggressive and very brutal sexual assault scene, and we'll just leave it at that. And as that scene starts to happen, she slowly lets go of me and like brings her head up off of my shoulder. And we kind of look at each other, and it's the slightest little awkward giggle. And then nothing is said. Like, we don't look at each other, nothing, the rest of the whole movie. And then the credits roll, and I look at her, and she goes, yeah, that was weird, wasn't it? And unfortunately, every time I see that movie and that scene pops up, it's the first thing I think of, and I start to giggle a little bit, which is the last thing you should be doing in the moment when that scene is happening. Yes. But, you know, shout out Catherine. It always makes me think of her. So,
all right. So every time you see the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, you think of Catherine.
I think of Catherine for the best possible reason.
Apparently. Okay, great. You want to once again tell people and Catherine how they can get in touch with you, Nick?
Yeah, absolutely. Find me over on Twitter at TheRehack, TheRehak. Every so often I pop up on episodes of Movies, Films, and Flicks, the Exploding Helicopter Podcast, and the Lambcast. And obviously you can see me on here yesterday, today, and maybe tomorrow?
I don't know. We have to rethink this one here. I don't know. All right, fine. I'll let you come back tomorrow. We'll see what happens with Thursday and Friday after that. You know.
Okay. Day by day. I feel
only if you know what. Well, you can come back tomorrow if you bring me a present. How's that?
Sounds good.
Is that fair? All right. Okay. Good. All right. So, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com, or on Twitter or on Facebook. So until tomorrow,
I'll have what she's having.
Gave me a thrill. With all your faults, I love you still. It had to be you. Wonderful you. Had to be you.